to it. Welcome to Off Message. I'm Isaac Dobert. Today's guest, Dolores Huerta, the famous or infamous labor leader, for a little after-the-fact Labor Day theme here. If you're like most people, you've heard of Cesar Chavez, but you may not have heard of Huerta, which says something about how the history of the 60s and the labor movement unfolded, and how it's been told since. She co-founded what became the United Farm Workers with Chavez in the 1960s, led some of the marches and the great boycotts that transformed the farm laborer system in California, and then across the country. She's also the one who came up with Si Se Puede, Yes We Can, 40 plus years before Barack Obama adopted it as his own, landing on the line by happenstance in conversation one night organizing in Arizona. That, like a lot of her story, has almost been lost to history, though it's the focus of a new movie about her life called, it's easy to remember, Dolores. Huerta was in Washington last week, where I sat down with her to talk about what her view on the current moment is, given her history in the labor movement. I think the 60s are back, was her line, and the sense that I got into in the article up on our site at politico.com. If you want to get a sense of who she is and how she's been a presence right in front of you, even if you don't realize it, take a look at a photo of Bobby Kennedy's victory speech at the Ambassador Hotel the night he won the 1968 California primary. She's right there, at his right. And as we talked about, she feels a little lingering guilt from that night about not saying more about feeling the security was a little light. And then a few minutes later, of course, he was assassinated in the hotel kitchen. Remember to subscribe and rate us on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast platform. And have you told your friends and coworkers about Off Message? You should. Get them to subscribe and rate us too. Catch up on old episodes and get ready for what's going to be a really amazing fall of episodes coming up. Email me at isaac@politico.com with your thoughts and suggestions for who else you'd like to hear. And of course, follow me on Facebook and on Twitter at Isaac Dover. And now, my conversation with Dolores Huerta. Is it weird having a movie about your life, watching your life on screen?
I guess it is kind of strange, especially when you see a younger you, a younger me. And then I didn't remember a lot of those interviews that are in the documentary. I just don't remember them. I don't remember them, especially the conversations between Cesar and myself. That's the first time that I had seen that footage.
Do you feel like you want to go back and talk to the person who was sitting there and say, like, oh, change that word or say it differently or wish you had said something in front of Cesar that you didn't?
Actually, I think I was astonished that I was able to say all those things, and I still feel the same way. So there was very little of that I would have ever changed.
Is it more progress than you would have hoped for, less than you would have hoped for, you think, when you look out at what's happened in politics and in the labor movement?
Well, the labor movement in particular, I think, has had a lot of setbacks, and there have been a lot of people that have been in power, starting with the Bushes, that have really set the labor movement back a lot. And I think the labor movement is so crucial to our society, because if you don't have a labor movement, you don't have a middle class. If you don't have a middle class, you don't have a democracy. So I think, you know, not having the kind of support for organized labor, for workers to be able to organize into their own organization, is a really big threat on American democracy. And so it's good to see in some cases that you have, like, the public sector that has been organized. And we know that the manufacturing jobs probably won't ever come back to the United States of America. So we need to kind of support the labor movement to organize the jobs that we have now. Because if not, I think it's going to be a real detriment. And we see that now, because you know that the wages have not come up, have not kept up with the cost of living. And even with this big movement that we have for a $15 minimum wage, even that falls short of people being able to support their families, because at the same time, everything else keeps going up, especially rents. And so we have this phenomenon now of so many people that are homeless, and everybody kind of throws up their hands and they don't know how they can solve these issues.
How much racism, sexism, classism do you think there still is in America in 2017?
Well, I have to say, as a woman of color and a fifth generation American, I might add.
It's further back than me.
Yeah. And, I've dealt with this all of my life. And now we see that it's really very visible. that people who before maybe were racist but didn't declare themselves as such now feel that they have license to do so. And I think that's part of our administration that we have right now in the White House, that even, you know, just last week, giving Joe Arpaio an avowed racist a pardon after he's been convicted of using racist methods, not only in his jails, but also in the community. And I think that really, makes a setback. But on the other hand, I think in some ways it's good that the racism is so visible, because then this means we have to do something about it. And one of the ways I think that we can conjure it is that in our educational system, starting from kindergarten, that we have to teach children, Anglo children and children of color, what the history of this country is, that Native Americans were the first slaves in the United States of America, and we have never given them reparations for the land that we took from them, that African slaves built the White House and the Congress, and that people from Mexico and Japan and China and the Philippines and India built the infrastructure of this country, built the railroads, did a lot of the construction in our cities, tilled the fields, so that they would be farmable. And as long as children do not learn that when they're very, very young in kindergarten, then the racism will continue. And the contributions of the labor movement, right? Having an 8-hour day and Social Security, public education, safety standards, workers' compensation,
There's a bumper sticker that I started seeing years ago that said the labor movement from the people who brought you the weekend.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah, that's good to know. And if people don't know that, then they're going to be ignorant, And there was a Spanish philosopher named José Ortega y Gasset in Spain. And he said, if you do not have an educated citizenry, then the powerful and the greedy will govern, and you have mob rule. And I think that's what we're approaching here, what we see.
We're approaching mob rule?
Well, that the greedy and the powerful will govern. Because when you have 10% of the population that has 90% of the wealth, and you have people that are on the streets and homeless, and people not having to work two jobs to support their families, there's something wrong with the structure of our society. And it's very, very alarming.
In the movie, you say, talking about your work in the 60s, it felt like the world could really change. That's what the 1960s felt like. Do you think that moment is gone? Are we at a moment now where the world could really change, for positive or negative?
Yeah, I think the 60s are back. I think the 60s are back, and I think you can see by all of the engagement of the young people that are now doing all of these protests, that I think that there is very much hope. And now you have other tools that we didn't have back in the 60s. You've got your internet, and you've got your cell phones, and you've got, Facebook and Instagram. And
the 60s all over again. Richard Nixon was elected in 1968, right? And a moment when the country felt like, I was not around, you were, but when there were all these protests going on and marches and people were active, do you think that that it will be different now, that it will translate into wins for progressive politicians of the type that you want, as opposed to what happened in 68 when Nixon talked about the silent majority? And that's essentially what Trump talks about, that people are speaking out, voting for him, who maybe didn't even want to admit that they were voting for him, but who supported a pulling back in the same way that Nixon did from where things had gotten to?
Well, I think at the end of the day, because I think the majority of the American public are people of good heart. And we do have to remember that Hillary Clinton actually won the popular vote. And I think that the Trump supporters are a minority of the American public. Unfortunately, they did win through the Electoral College. But at the end of the day, I believe that we will overcome. And like we did in the 60s, with all of the repression that we had from the Nixon administration and Ronald Reagan, that when we came over that, we had more people of color in the colleges and more women, and so we made a lot of progress. And I do believe that's going to happen again, because I think this is a wake-up call for America. A lot of people were kind of out to lunch, and they weren't engaged, and now they realize that they have to become engaged. And I love to quote the poet Pablo Neruda, who said, "They can cut all the flowers, but you can't hold back the spring." And I do believe that we are the spring. We are the ones that are going to go forward. We're going to sow those seeds of justice, and they're going to sprout, and we're going to be a lot stronger. And then we can really take care of the things that we didn't take care of, like our educational system, to bring in ethnic studies at the kindergarten level, you know, to make sure that people know what the contributions of labor and women and also, you know, people of color have been to build this United States of America.
It's the future in a way that you seem to think was coming if Robert Kennedy had been elected president. You were standing next to him when he declared victory in the California primary that night that he was shot. Tell me about that night. Were you with him before you went on stage?
Yes, actually. I had walked with the senator up to the stage, and I was really worried because I didn't feel he had any security, because Cesar Chavez had so many death threats on his life. So we always had a lot of security around Cesar, and I was worried about that. And I really suffered for many, many years from guilt, because I never mentioned that. And I was
worried
really, about that.
So you really, at the moment when you were walking up, you thought, this seems light?
I was like, you know, when we started walking down, and I thought he has no security around him. And when he was at the podium, and a reporter pulled out a microphone from right there from the podium, I thought that could have been a bomb.
Yeah.
But I didn't say anything. And to this day, I mean, I felt so guilty, because maybe if I would have said something, then maybe that wouldn't have happened the way that it happened. It was a tragedy. I think that our nation, to this day, is still suffering from that tragedy of losing Robert Kennedy.
Did he think that night that he was going to be the president of the United States? Did he feel like he was there?
Absolutely. I think we all felt that, because we knew that if he won California, he would have the delegate votes to win. But then the other thing in the film, and I do hope people go see the film, Dolores, I feel funny saying that, because there's a line in the film where Robert Kennedy says, we have obligations to our fellow citizens, you know. We have obligations to our fellow citizens. And I think that line in the film, like many other lines in this film that are so prophetic, you might say, and so pertinent about what's happening in today's world, you know, when I see that line that he said, and I think about everything that we have to do, that we as citizens and residents of this country, we have obligations to our fellow citizens, you know, responsibilities to our fellow citizens to make sure that this is a great country. You know, we're the richest country in the world. We have all of the resources that we need to be a powerful, not only a powerful nation, but to take care of the people in this country.
And you're standing next to him when he delivers that victory speech. Did he say anything to you privately that said, okay, like, looks like this is happening?
Well, what happened is, as we were walking up to the podium, you know, in Los Angeles, in the Latino community, they had actually closed some of the polling sites because everybody had voted. And the vote for him was something like over 90% of the vote, and he knew that. And
so, did he say something to you about that?
Yeah, he was just congratulating me, and he said, I've heard what's happening out there, because we had people, not only were we working in East Los Angeles, but we were also working in the South Central area where a lot of the African-American community lived.
And then it's within minutes of when he leaves the stage that he was shot. What were you part of walking off the stage with him? What are those 10-15 minutes like for you from when he finishes the speech?
Well, what happened is the plan was, right after he spoke, we were supposed to go to the ballroom where we had a mariachi waiting for him. And a lot of the farm workers that had been out there knocking on doors and walking precincts were waiting for him. And so instead they took him back to the kitchen, and some of our staff of the United Farm Workers, they grabbed my arm and they said, hey, wait a minute, you're supposed to be taking the Senate over to the ballroom. I said, well, you know, I really can't do anything because they're taking him to the other, in the other direction.
All of a sudden, the security is there.
Yeah, so I kind of fell behind, and I wasn't able to catch up to the senator. So at the moment that he was killed, I was actually on the other side of the doorway as we were going through there, and then they slammed the door shut. So
you heard the gunshots?
I thought they were firecrackers.
Really?
There were so many. There were like eight shots, you know, and I thought they were firecrackers. And then the person person walking next to me, Henry Sanchez Esteban, he used to work with the United Auto Workers, he grabbed me, threw me up against the wall, and said, no, those are bullets out there. And then we heard people screaming, so we knew it was something really bad.
And you know pretty quickly that he's dead,
yeah.
Right?
Well, he didn't die right away. He died like in the next morning,
right.
Early in the morning, yeah.
What's that moment like when...
It was devastating.
I've never had a movie made of my life, and you've lived a longer and more complicated life than I have. But I would imagine that it's tough at points to watch things in there. Like there's a section that's about your children. You have 11 children, but a number of them talking about how hard it was for you, that you weren't around and that they missed you. And one of your daughters talking about how you went away to New York for a couple of years and then she didn't want to go back and stay with you. Was that hard to watch, to see your children talking in that way? You gave your life to the labor movement, and they're saying, well, we appreciate it and respect it and admire it, but we also wanted mom to be around.
Yeah, it was all interesting. In fact, when there's one scene when my daughter Camila is crying. She's the youngest one of my children, and also the executive director of my foundation, I might add. But I reminded her that when she was in her dorm at Mills College, that she's calling me on the dorm telephone in the hallway and saying, Mom, you're not going to believe this, but there are some girls here that are crying for their mothers. So I reminded her of that. But in the farm worker movement, we always had, child care for the children. We had a Montessori school for the farm worker kids. And we always had people, so they were never alone. The other thing is that my...
But had they expressed those feelings to you before directly? Or were you saying it for the first time?
Well, actually, it was something that I knew, but actually had never seen that expressed to them by them. So that was a little hard to take, you know. Yeah. But knowing that my children survived and that they grew up strong. You know, my oldest son is a doctor. He's a family practice doctor. My son Emilio, who's a public interest attorney, who was featured in the documentary and is now a candidate for the 21st Congressional District in California. They grew up strong. My daughter Juanita is a teacher. I have a daughter who's a nurse, an oncology nurse. And so they all grew up strong, you know. They all
so it's
strong.
11 children. How many grandchildren?
I have 17 grandchildren.
Can you keep them all straight?
Eight great grandchildren. Yeah,
If I asked you to name all of your children, grandchildren, great grandchildren, could you do it?
Of course, I could.
Do you know all their birthdays?
Not all of them. Yeah, some of them I try to remember, but you know, it's again. I didn't spend a lot of time with my children. I don't spend very much time with my grandchildren either. Yeah. But because we're still working, you know, we have my foundation, the Dolores Huerta Foundation. We're out there continuing the grassroots organizing, empowering people to become leaders in their community, and they do a great job. You know, once they settled a big lawsuit against our current high school district for the discrimination against Latino and African American students, we have this throughout the country, really, where you have students of color that are not getting a quality education and are being discriminated against. And so we organize parents to come and they get engaged with the school districts, and you know, with our grassroots organizing, we're able to get people to take power in their communities. And I love to tell the stories of one of our women who's from Mexico, speaks very broken English, but she got herself elected to the school board in Weed Patch where Grapes of Wrath was filmed. Mm-hmm. And they were going to get rid of the breakfast program for farm worker kids, and so she got rid of the superintendent and kept the program. And then she got elected to a water district. And when she got on that water district, she found out that the manager had been fired from another district for embezzlement. So she got rid of him. You know, and then she started looking at the bank
and
records. And found that there was $250,000 missing from the water district, and so she called in the grand jury. And so this is what we're doing with my foundation, is empowering local communities to take the power and to get engaged in their local communities, and whatever things that they need fixing, that they are the ones that have the power to do it.
We are expecting that there will be a move by President Trump to change the DACA restrictions or prescriptions would potentially change lives for a lot of Dreamer kids. What do you make of that?
I think it's mean. I think that he's got this obsession, a fixation against people of color. You know, the way that he keeps attacking Mexicans. You know, I'm a Mexican American. You know, and my great grandparents were here before his were, I'm sure. You know, Well, his grandfather came from Germany. Family, you know? You know, my great-great-grandfather was born in Vermont.
He goes, he goes back, I believe it's his father's father, and his mother...
His grandfather, was from Germany.
And his mother was also an immigrant, but not from Mexico.
And also, you know, this obsession against Obama, you know, they're trying to, you know, erase everything that that President Obama, the administration did, the progress that we made under the Obama administration, and, you know, keep talking of this obsession with the wall from Mexico. I mean, the man is so ignorant in terms, again, of American history. He does not apparently realize, you know, that a third of the United States was once Mexico, you know? Or maybe I put that another way, that Mexico took, the United States took a third of Mexico, which is not part of the United States of America. And you know, Mexico is our neighbor and one of our biggest trading partners. And for him to go on and rant this way, it just gives license to all the racism that already exists in the United States of America.
But what is it going to do in terms of real-world impact if the rules about Dreamers are changed?
Well, it's going to hurt a lot of families, as the deportations have. And it's really interesting because at the same time that they are deporting a lot of farm workers, they're talking about revising the Becerra program and bringing in people as contract labor, which, you know, they cannot vote, they cannot become residents, they cannot become citizens, they're not covered by Social Security or disability insurance, you know. So this is a step up above slavery, you know, and this is what their plan is. The Republican plan is to deport all of the people that you have here undocumented and bring in folks here under foreign labor contracts. Dianne Feinstein, you know, has a bill in the Congress right now, which is called the Blue Visa, which is limited to farm workers, that would give them a visa to stay here and work here and not be deported.
Obama did many deportations himself, well, not himself, but his administration. You're less critical of Obama than you were of Trump on this issue.
Oh, actually not. I mean, I actually met with the president, as did many of the immigrant rights organizations, asking him, you know, to stop the deportations. And unfortunately, it wasn't until the last years of his administration that he finally said that he would do the DAPA program. Mm-hmm. You know, to give the parents of children that are born here as U.S. citizens, mm-hmm. to give them permission to stay here in the country.
Right, that was 2014,
And I think it was unfortunate, too. But I think, at the same time, a lot of people say, well, why didn't Obama do more about immigration when he first got elected, when we had a 25 Democratic majority in the Congress? Well, when we think about, he only passed the Affordable Care Act, I think, with 4 or 5 votes in that same Congress, you know. So the energy, I think, of the administration went into trying to get the Affordable Care Act, which, of course, covered many more people than, say, immigration.
One of the lines that is most associated with Obama, si se puede, yes, we can, is credited by a lot of people to Cesar Chavez, but you are the one who came up with it. Tell me about coming up with it. How did that come about, that you landed on that as a chant?
Well, it actually happened in Arizona in 1972. Cesar had just finished was in the middle of a 25-day water-only fast that he did in Arizona. And I was organizing people to come and to support, you know, our organizing effort that we were doing then in Arizona. And when I went to some of these professional Latinos, and they told me, oh, you can't do it here in Arizona. In California, you can do everything that you do, get all that done, but in Arizona, you can't. And my answer to them in Spanish was, si se puede. You know,
just in conversation, it just came out of you.
Well, I was frustrated, and they would keep telling me why they couldn't help. They couldn't do anything. And I said, no, yes, you can. But we were having the conversation was in Spanish, and mm-hmm. so I told them, si se puede in Arizona also. And after that meeting, every night we had a rally, and we had a mass every night where Cesar was fasting. And when I told people the story about I was trying to get these professional Latinos to support us, and they said no, and I told them, si se puede, everybody jumped up and started shouting, si se puede, si se puede.
And so you knew you were on to something. You used it the next day?
Well, I think we kept on using it. You know, it was a theme of our campaign, and people use it now all over. You know, and it's very good because it's not only about the courage of a singular action, of an individual action, but it's also the fact that collectively we can make things happen.
Does it mean something different in the night, from the night that you first came up with it to 2008 when Obama was using it? And he has since given you credit for it. at the White House. So it's that was official. And does it mean something different than today, or is it the same sense?
No, I think it's the same thing. We see that they use it a lot in schools, you know, for children when they have lessons that are difficult. You say, si se puede. You know, there's even a political party in Spain now called the Podemos Party, and that their slogan, si se puede. So,
all from that night in Arizona.
Yeah, and I think that's what, you know, and hopefully that's what the film is all about, too, is that people will realize that they have the power. And this is what we say to people when we organize them. You have power. You may be, maybe you don't have a college education or high school education, but you have power. But the power is in your person. But we know that individually, we cannot do anything. It's got to be collective. We've got to work with other people to make it happen. And we've got to take direct, nonviolent action to make sure that the things that we want to happen will happen. Because we are so many, we're the majority. People of goodwill are the majority. But if we don't act, if we don't engage, if we don't do anything, then things stay the same. And but we have the power to change it. Si se puede.
All right. Dolores Huerta, thanks for taking the time.
Thank you. And if people want to know more about the movie, it's on the web, Dolores the Movie, and the schedule there where the screenings are going to be held. It's got the theater release in September the 1st. And if they want to know more about my organization, the Dolores Huerta Foundation, we're on the web at DoloresHuerta.org.
All right. Thank you. That was Dolores Huerta. And since she made another pitch for her movie at the end, I'll leave it to her. Thanks as always to our producer, Bridget Mulcahy. And again, if you haven't subscribed and told a friend, do it now. Catch you next time on Off Message.